This is Radio Influence.
He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the count.
Wow.
And here comes a mention. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC Fight Night 107 and World Series of Fighting 35 took place this past weekend, and Daniel Galvan and I are going to recap and give our thoughts on both of these fight cards on this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast on Radio Influence. Some of the topics we plan to discuss on this edition of the post-fight podcast include Jimmy Manuel's post-fight comments following his win over Corey Anderson concerning former UFC light heavyweight champion John Jones. What is the legacy of Brad Pickett after he lost that UFC Fight Night 107 against Marlon Vera? And is Bellator regretting the decision to release Blagoy Ivanov as once again he retained the World Series of Fighting heavyweight title? Now, before I bring in Daniel, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Fight TV. Fight is your number one source for MMA, boxing, and pro wrestling video. Live stream free and premium MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing. Coming up on Friday on Fight TV, ACB 55 will be streaming free on Fight. And on Sunday, Minotaur 5 will be on Fight for $14.99. Download the Fight app today by going to fight.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fight.tv/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Daniel, how was your weekend, man?
Jason, it was a phenomenal sports weekend. We had the World Series of Fighting. We had UFC. It was absolutely mad in March. I don't know if there was anything else going on, but I just spent all weekend at Buffalo Wild Wings. I requested them to change every TV on Saturday and Sunday to UFC Fight Night, and everyone there hated me.
Yeah, it was a good weekend for sports. Unfortunately, I was in Orlando for the NCAA tournament.
Poor Jason. Oh,
man. Yeah, it was rough watching the Noles get their butts handed to them on Saturday early evening, but had a good time in Orlando. And and then the amazing catch by Adam Jones in the World Baseball Classic. That was some highlights of the sports weekend.
Yeah, man, when you were in Orlando watching Florida State, at least they got one victory for you, right? You saw that one, the round of 64 win. So you got that, even though they're a 3 seed and they lost in the second round, and that should be incredibly disappointing, and maybe you should cry tonight. I will say, did you see any UFC fighter kits?
No.
What?
You know what the weirdest thing about being in that tournament, and even my wife kind of mentioned it too, was people that were at that game that were wearing college apparel of teams that were not playing there.
What did you see? Did you see some
I saw some West Virginia. Michigan State. I saw a couple different ones, and I was kind of like, well, maybe they live in Orlando and they had bought tickets and they just want to see college basketball, and that's the way they're supporting their own team. I don't know. It was interesting. It was an interesting time, and but you know, we had a good time. It was yeah, I was in a section with a majority of Florida State fans. So one of the funniest moments was on Thursday night with their win there against Florida Gulf Coast. Was, you know, they were winning that game, and it was about, I don't know, 20 seconds left in the game, and Leonard Hamilton calls a timeout with FSU up by, you know, 4 or 5 points, whatever it was. And this one guy screams, he goes, "Why, Leonard, why? I got to work tomorrow." And by the way, this was like at midnight. I mean, it was a late game for the East Coast. So, but you know, had a good time. It was been a while since I've been to a tournament game, and you know, had a good time. I did forget the fact of, since it's an NCAA event, no adult beverages for sale.
That is downright un-American. I mean, that is one of the weirdest rules, because there's a couple NCAA venues, like colleges, that you can go grab a daddy soda. But I guess under the same umbrella, I feel like you can do it at the national championship for football, but maybe you can't. I don't know.
I mean, I've never been to a national title game. I mean, I know that it's like it's a weird rule with NCAA.
If it's
like a a regular game, not a a tournament or game where if it's a on campus stadium, there's not alcohol sales unless it's like in a premium club area. But if it's like it's an off campus stadium, like I live here in Tampa, so the University of South Florida football team plays at Raymond James Stadium, so you can buy beer and liquor since it's an off campus. It's one of those just weird rules because I'm thinking about if you're a college or a university and you're getting a percentage of that concession sales, why would you not want to be selling beer and alcohol?
Totally. I know my school where I attend, and now I'm not going to say where I attend because maybe it's just illegal. But they do sell beer sometimes. It's like a big promotion. It's like, we have beer. And obviously you see a difference. So I'm sure
maybe people start showing up more.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think if you're a struggling school, you're going to get some money. Granted, Florida State not necessarily struggling in any way other than, ethically. But Jason, I will say that, you guys, despite losing in the second round, they put together a nice team, competed well in the ACC. I think you should be proud of Florida State basketball, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of my FSU fans, I think their expectations were a little unrealistic, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens with FSU. Jonathan Isaac, I mean, I think everyone expects him to go pro. Dwayne Bacon, I don't know if he goes pro or not. I mean, last time I saw a projected late first round pick. And Xavier Retain-Mays, maybe also he goes pro. So, but that's college basketball for you. When you're a successful program, and the one and dones, the two and dones are gone. So, it'll be interesting. And I'm sure this week I'll be tuning. Even though FSU's out of the tournament, I'll still sit there and watch the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight going to a soccer match on Saturday. So looking forward to that. So no MMA this weekend, Daniel. I know it's a little surprising. Doesn't happen too often, but we did have MMA this past weekend. UFC Fight Night 107, World Series of Fighting 35. And first of all, we'll talk about the UFC event before we get into the World Series of Fighting event. Once again, weigh-ins happen, and we lose more fights again. This is becoming it's not really a new story anymore. I think, is it almost to the point of, like, do we almost, on the pre-fight shows, we like to say who's going to miss weight. Do we now start playing the game, what fight's not going to happen?
If we played the game, if we did a previous show for this card, and if we had played that game, I think we both would have had a great chance at success, because when you have two fights get canceled, well, one, there is some sense of relief if you're a long-term MMA viewer, because then you're like, oh, great. Now we only have 11 fights on this card. I can get through this one. But there's also a sense of disappointment because you see some – I mean, when you look at the fights that we lost here, Jason, we lost, what, Entwistle and Brett Johns,
yep,
and Tom Breese and Bambuse. I wanted to see Breese fight. I wanted to see Brett Johns fight, and – it is a bit of a shame that we don't see that, but to see those two fights go down so quickly back to back, it really reflects kind of where we are, and it's hard to diagnose what the issue is, but certainly there's some type of issue.
Yeah, I mean, I know that the popular sentiment is, and it's two different situations of why Entwistle and Breeze pulled out of this fight. Entwistle was obviously weight issues. He missed weight once again. We'll get to that momentarily. Breeze, his manager, doing an interview with MMAJunkie.com saying, high blood pressure, obviously not weight issues, other issues there for him there. And I know it's easy to blame the early weigh-ins, but, and I was thinking about this Saturday after, the Entwistle thing came down, and I'm sitting there going, I understand why people want to blame the early weigh-ins, but, part of this you have to put on the fighters because they know when they're going to weigh in. So I think that maybe there should be some adjustments to their early weigh-ins. I've talked about that before, but, Ian Entwistle, now this is a second straight fight that he has pulled out of, within, hours of the event starting. You may remember back at UFC 204, pulled out before the weigh-in started on that day. So he did not fight there, now did not fight here. And then he put a message on his Facebook page. Sounds like retirement is coming for him, but clearly he's not a, if he maybe has a change of heart and decides he does want to continue fighting, he's not a 135er. He's a 145er. But when I'm thinking about this entire situation and previous situation that happened, I think that one of the things that managers need to do for their fighters is they need to try to negotiate a clause into these contracts that, hey, if you make weight and that your fight and that your opponent does not show up on fight night, not only do you get your show money, but you also get your win money, because, you know, I mean, you know, we don't know how much money that, you know, exactly that Bambuse and John's got. And the other part of it is you feel bad for these guys because, you know, they put all this hard work into this fight and the fight doesn't happen and they don't gain anything out of it because, you know, you're not, your ranking is not going to improve.
Yeah, this is almost like a human thing, right? Where expectations are absolutely the worst thing in the world, because if you don't meet your expectations, you just feel a sense of pointlessness and sadness. And for these fighters, Jason, I feel like if you're Brett Johns, if you're Olawale, you'll feel that sense, because you literally just think about all the investment they put in terms of time, in terms of energy, in terms of dieting. That's the most important part. And to have your fight scratched because of potentially issues with making weight the day of, it's got to simply be the worst feeling in the world. Not only has all this preparation gone to waste, surely the amount of money they're receiving, if they're receiving any, which I would assume they're receiving some portion, wouldn't be close to what it would be had they won and then potentially won a performance of the night. And simply put, in a sport that they love competing in, I would assume, they just haven't. They don't have that ability because of something that was independent of their control. And it's not necessarily like their fighter got injured. I mean, I guess Tom Breese did with the elevated heart rate. But, you know, when you see fighters pull out of fights like the same day as weigh-in or the day before a fight, that's usually what you point towards, is some type of issue with the weight cut.
Yeah, and you just hope that, and, you know, we've seen all this weight cutting, you know, issues in the past, and hopefully, you know, the culture of MMA has to change. And we've lived in this culture where it's not about fighting at the weight class you're most healthy at. It's about fighting in the weight class that you can make on weigh-in day. So hopefully, as time goes on, that maybe the culture of MMA does change. But when it comes to the actual fights that happened, you had two highlight reel knockouts on this card, one on the main card and one in the preliminary card. And, of course, we'll talk about the first one that happened in the main event. Jimmy Manawa knocks out Corey Anderson, a devastating one-punch knockout there at the 3 minute and 5 second mark of the opening round. I thought Corey Anderson was doing a good job of moving his feet, but man, what a devastating knockout by Jimmy Manawa.
Yeah, this was just a great performance out of Jimmy Manawa. Corey Anderson, you know what you're going to get out of him, right? You know what he wants to do in this fight. It's certainly not trade with Jimmy Manawa, and Manawa, with his movement, really made sure that it did not get to the ground, and it was really a matter of time until he was able to land a significant strike, and when he did, it was lights out for Corey Anderson. You're right, though. You know, Corey Anderson, really, there wasn't a whole lot in terms of what he could piece together with his hands and his feet, but in terms of defensive posture, I think there is a lot to like. And again, Corey Anderson, he's in that Misha Serkinov pool of fighters, and it's a pretty shallow pool. Tyson Pedro's in there with his trunks as well, of younger-esque light heavyweights that should really be taken care of.
Whoa, you do understand Jimmy Manawa was 37 years old, right?
No, Corey Anderson.
Oh, okay.
Not Jimmy Manawa. Jimmy Manawa is a part of the problem, Jason. He's about 55, and he's definitely going to get a title shot eventually. I would say, though, with this win, as brutal as it was, it does remind you that Jimmy Manawa does have one toy to play with when he fights Cormier, when he fights Johnson. Probably not John Jones. Apparently, that's not something he wants to do. But he has the toy of incredible power to go with striking technique. And despite the fact that he would probably enter any championship fight as a pretty big underdog, he at least has that in his back pocket that he can knock fools out. Moving forward, Jason, though, I think for Jimmy Manawa, I know he called for it, right? I don't think a title shot is next. I think a number one contenders fight is what's next for Jimmy Manawa.
You know, when I heard his comment, my first thought was like, what? why do you think you're deserving of a title shot? Then I started to kind of think about it, and I was like, you know what? As if for something were to happen where John Jones is not back this summer, then if the UFC wanted to go the route of a different title challenger, then I could see Jimmy Manuel, where maybe they say, you know what, we don't want to do Glover Gustafsson winner. We want to try to put some new blood in a title fight.
If then, Cormier is a champion, that's a crucial component to that.
Because and so I was like, okay, but then I heard his comments about John Jones. And for people who did not hear what Jimmy Manuel said, this was his quote. Quote, I'm not interested in John Jones. John Jones takes steroids, and now he's been banned for steroids. Before, I was a big fan of John Jones, the things he's done in the octagon and everything, but he's been suspended for a year or something, and he's had issues before. He's a great fighter. I greatly respect him, but he's been banned for steroids, and that taints everything that he has done. So I'm not really interested. When he comes back, I'll fight him, no problem. But I'm focused on the belt right now, and that's going to be the winner of DC and Rumble Johnson. Now, I think that's you could certainly take that quote different ways. And one of my followers responded with this. He said he thought that maybe Jimmy Manuel was maybe using a little reverse psychology to add fuel to a potential fight with John Jones. You know, look, John Jones come back, he's fighting for the title. So I think Jimmy Manuel has to understand that he's going to have to fight someone else. Now, he does train with Alexander Gustafsson now. Of course, he's already lost to Gustafsson. People have mentioned Shogun Hua. Shogun wants to get in title contention. I think that's a fight that makes a lot of sense. If Teixeira were to beat Gustafsson, I think a Teixeira fight makes a lot of sense in the world. But in terms of Jimmy Manuel and being a title challenger, I think the problem that you would have in saying that right now is, what is his best win? Give me the fighter that sticks out to you on his resume. Now, let's look at his UFC wins. Kyle Kingsbury, Cyril Diabate, Ryan Jimmo, Jan Blachowicz, Ovince St. Preux, and Corey Anderson. Who is the best win?
A long time ago, I probably would have said OSP, but I think it's become Corey Anderson over time, which tells you everything you need to know. With that being said, he is in a division where if we play this game of who is your best win, it will be incredibly depressing rather quickly. But there is still a pretty clear-cut John Jones in front of him in terms of who gets the next title shot. And, you know, Jimmy Manuel, though, in these post-fight comments, he's just saying what's best for him. And usually what you get from a fighter's perspective is a bit of an overrated, self-awareness in terms of what's really next for him. So if you look at what he's calling for, chances are if you take a couple of steps downward, that's what really he should get. And I think you laid it out pretty nicely. There's a couple matchups where a fight with Shogun makes sense, and then you have two fights. You have the championship fight between Cormier and Johnson. You have the fight between Glover and Gustafsson. It's one of those things where Glover wins, like you said, that matchup makes sense. You probably don't want to fight your teammate and rematch Gustafsson. And then with Cormier-Johnson, you look at maybe a Daniel Cormier loss, and you match it with Daniel Cormier. If Johnson loses that fight, I probably wouldn't feel too good about that one, given the way Manuel and Johnson's last fight went out. But despite the fact that Jimmy Manuel literally has very few quality wins, this is a division with very few quality fighters, so he is certainly right up there. And I would certainly say Jimmy Manuel, at 39 years old, potential boxing undercard fighter. I saw he was also calling out David Hay in a boxing match.
What is up with MMA fighters not calling out boxers?
I want to watch Conor Floyd, I guess, but there's
I'd love Conor just circling out Dan Raphael and just railing it. I mean, you talk about a tremendous 45-second promo he just cut on a journalist. Oh, I do wonder if boxing people realize what's coming to them that we have seen with Conor McGregor the past couple of years.
Yeah, so Conor wants to box Mayweather, right?
Yes. It looks like probably September is when that fight would happen. I was on another podcast, and they were asking me about it, and they were kind of like, you know, hey, this is ridiculous. It's not going to happen. And I was like, look, and this was before the the Dana White comments came out, but you know, and I kind of put, I think it's got about a 30% chance happening. But I truly believe if you want to make this like this Super Bowl of combat sports, why not have a cage and a boxing ring, put on UFC fight, put on boxing fight, so it helps both sports out.
Man, the thing is, Connor doesn't give a crap about your sport. He don't give a crap about
it. I know, but yeah. I think in terms of if you're, you know, if you're the promote, you know, your Mayweather Promotions, and you want to promote your young boxers coming up, I think it's a great way to promote them in the sport of boxing. Because look, you're going to have MMA fans that are going to tune in that may not necessarily watch boxing, and you're going to have boxing fans that may not normally watch MMA. And if it was a co-promote event between the UFC and Mayweather Promotion, I just think it makes all the sense in the world for it to be a hybrid show.
Yeah, I think you're right. There is some awkwardness that we've seen out of these types of shows, right, Jason, where we do have, you know, I do think having these two, a ring and a cage, really messes with the environment, I think, in the crowd. But you're right. There is something to be gained with that being said. And a lot of these, like, big picture shows where all the eyes are upon it, there doesn't appear to be much long-term value there. I mean, obviously with Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bonner, we talk about how people watch that and continue to watch the sport of mixed martial arts. But just think about all the attention the boxing world had with Pacquiao Mayweather. No one can name you a single fighter on that undercard.
And that's, I mean, let's be honest, but I think that's an issue with boxing is it's all about the main event, where, you know, you look at a UFC event, and maybe it's just because we follow MMA, you know, extremely close, where we look at, hey, there's this fight, there's that fight, you know, it's, you know, all signs point that it's going to happen, and it's going to be interesting to kind of see how that does play out. And boy, could you imagine if somehow Conor wins that fight? That has to be the UFC's worst nightmare, right? Because if he wins, that sets up the rematch. So now he's not fighting for what, another year in the UFC? I mean, it's,
yeah. Then
how many interim lightweight title fights do we have for next year?
576. I mean, it's the UFC has a problem, and it's Conor McGregor just isn't that much into them. It's very much like a high school relationship where Conor McGregor has hit puberty. And he's looking at other people. The problem for Conor is he's going to take on the best boxer in like 15 years in the sport of boxing. And despite the fact that Conor McGregor has made a career out of shocking the world, he has obviously an extensive background in practicing boxing. Like, he's fighting Conor McGregor. I mean, he's fighting Floyd Mayweather in a boxing match. Like, dude. Like, that, this isn't going to end well. It might, like, one punch could end
Floyd.
You know
what they say about Father Time.
Yeah, but you know what they say about if you're Floyd Mayweather and you're a freaking great boxer, and if you're Conor and you're not, one person's going to win, and it's going to be the guy who's the – I mean, look, here's the thing about Floyd Mayweather that you get concerned about. It's totally independent of, like, his technique inside the cage. You worry about his age and the fact that he's – not invested in this fight and taking it seriously. That's what you would worry about.
And he has everything to lose in that fight. Conor has nothing to lose.
Yeah, so that's the one thing in Conor's favor, that the focus may not be there for Mayweather.
And does at one point, does Conor just, you know, fake like he's shooting for a takedown just to screw with him?
Yeah, no, Conor's probably going to do a bunch of stuff to screw with Floyd. And it speaks to why the fight probably should happen, that it's going to be a part of people's conversations every day until the fight does happen. But there is a real probability that fight playing out and we get sad combat sports. It's always sneaking around the corner, right, Jason? Sad combat sports. I mean, we got it on Saturday, right? With Brad Pickett. We were excited. We were good combat sports. Brad Pickett's last fight. And then out of nowhere, sad combat sports. Boom, head kick knockout by Marlon Vera. Brad Pickett's out.
And he was winning that fight.
He was, dude. He was going to go out with a victory. And that was a shame, man. I really love Brad one-punch Pickett. I mean, I think for a lot of mixed martial arts fans, you go back to when he was in the WEC, and it almost seemed like right when the UFC made the transition, he just never was able to find much momentum, despite the fact that he got, what, over 10 fights. So I was really hoping that Brad Pickett was going to be able to end his career in London, England. With the win, he was winning. Marlon Vera had other plans.
I'll tell you, when I saw the knockout when I was watching on Sunday initially, my thought was, before they showed the replay, I was like, ooh, man, well, that was kind of a quick stoppage. But then when they showed the replay, I was like, yeah, no problem with that stoppage.
Yeah, Brad Pickett protested it. I mean, but you're always going to see that in guys that are moderately groggy. But, I mean, he was groggy. And when you're in that situation, had to find up and stopped, you're probably talking about more strikes and even a more significant damage to one's brain. So I thought it was a good stoppage as well. I don't really know what Marlon Vera does next. He feels like a guy, despite the fact that he has, what, a 3-2 record in the UFC at this moment in time. I think he's a 145er. You don't feel too optimistic about him, but, I mean, this is a guy from Ecuador. There are very few fighters from Ecuador. He's 24 years old. So who knows what's the future is for Marlon Vera. But, I mean, that was a highlight reel win. I would certainly say that when you think of Marlon Vera, you're going to think of this fight. So this is definitely his peak thus far.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he takes this fight on 7 days' notice. He's having a fight. He's more than ready to take another short notice fight if that opportunity does come about there. I love the corner advice that the Vera's corner gave him, basically telling him to go out there and take it, and he does that. You know, obviously when a guy retires, the legacy word comes up, and I think that for Brad Pickett, you know, you mentioned about people are going to remember the WEC days. I think, you know, When he dropped out of the 125, I think we all thought that maybe he would work his way to a title matchup. That ultimately did not happen. But how much of people are going to remember about Brad Pickett is the fact that he was 1-6 in his last 7 fights and 3-8 in his last 11.
Yeah, well, here's a cool thing about Brad Pickett. If you look at Demetrius Johnson's record, he's one of the two people to beat DJ. So he's got that little, you know, Cub Scout badge to go on his jacket. Brad Pickett was a guy who, you don't want to overstate Brad Pickett. It's not like he was the greatest bantamweight of all time, but he was a fixture of the lighter weight classes for a very long time, and he served as a draw, not a big one, but he served as a draw for the English crowd in terms of the lighter weight classes. I think if you look at the products at 145 and at 135 and at 125 that have come out of England, he's pretty damn high on the list.
Yeah, it's you know one of those guys. When you think of UK MMA, you're going to think there of Brad Pickett. So wish him the best of luck in retirement. Co-main event: Gunnar Nelson, a submission win over Alan Chopin. Just a beautiful knockout there. He rocks Alan Chopin and then immediately goes for the submission. Sometimes, you know, when guys rock someone and go for submission, may not always work out for him, but a tremendous win there for Gunnar Nelson. I do got to give Alan Chopin a little bit of credit. I mean, he was in a really bad position there, the last 2 minutes of that first round, able to survive, but then, but another great win by Gunnar Nelson. His coach, John Kovanoff, calling out Stephen Thompson. I like that matchup.
Man, I tell you what, John Kavanaugh is kind of a genius, right? You always have to fear him if you're a guy who isn't, you know, if he's not cornering you, you always kind of got to fear him, because I think John Kavanaugh, when he looks at Stephen Thompson, he sees a couple things. He sees the top-ranked welterweight in the world, a guy whose next fight obviously won't be for the championship, and potentially what I would assume is he sees a matchup at some type of thing that he likes matchup-wise for Gunnar Nelson. So I think this is Kavanaugh taking the reins here and being like, you need to get this fight, because what happened, it's Damian Maia. We need to avoid these types of matchups, because for Gunnar Nelson, he looked good on the feet here against Alan Jabouin, and obviously he was great on the ground. That's his thing. He is still wiping off the stink of that Damian Maia demolishment. Mm-hmm. And it was like the weirdest demolishment ever, because it's not like it was particularly exciting, but it sure was dominant. So Nelson, I think that really hurt his perception again, that loss to Damian Maia. What he's been doing is trying to clean up and improve his stock. So I don't think with this win over Alan Jabouin, Gunnar Nelson necessarily deserves a fight against the top-ranked welterweight in the world that isn't a champion. But I like what Kavanaugh's doing, Jason. He needs to be real meticulous with the types of matches he makes for his fighter and advocates for, because clearly there is a pretty avenue to dismantle Gunnar's game. But this win over Alan Jabouin was a step in the right direction. And for Alan Jabouin, I think for the last couple of years, what you've seen out of him is kind of running in place.
Yeah, but a huge win there by Gunnar Nelson. The opening matchup of the main card, Arnold Allen, a split decision win over Makwan Amirkhani. I did not see giving Amir Khani two of those three rounds there. I thought it was a pretty clear 29-28. Got to mention the maybe you call it more of a grazing fence grabs by Arnold Allen in the opening round, where the referee really didn't give no warning at all. Amir Khani in the second round not taking advantage of that top position in the final 90 seconds of the round. Do got to credit Arnold Allen with some great work from the bottom there in those 90 seconds. But, I thought it was just a clear 2-1 for Arnold Allen.
Yeah, there wasn't really a fight of the night handed out, but on this card, it was just four performances of the nights, which actually I agree with. The ones that got it certainly deserved it. Mana won Nelson, Vera, Diakis. But if there was a fight of the night, Jason, that's just what I would give it to. I thought it was kind of back and forth, but he did have one judge to give it to, Amir Khani. At the end of the day, the right guy won, Arnold Allen. Arnold Allen, just a real well-versed fighter, a guy who... You know, when you think of premier featherweights, you don't necessarily think of Arnold Allen, but he is slowly but surely climbing up the ladder. He's a guy to keep an eye on. But so is Makwan Amir Khani, to be sure. But in this one, it was a matter of Arnold Allen. You know, he was losing some grappling positional situations there, but what you saw was just a real, real ability to just score points even off of his back. And, Arnold Allen is a fighter who's really understood the system. I had a 29-28 for Arnold Allen.
Yeah. In terms of the preliminary card, I think obviously that there's two notes to mention. First off, Joe Duffy, as he heads into free agency following the win there over Rezzy Madotti. And the other one's got to be Mark Diakis with that knockout over Timo Pakulin in 30 seconds. Free agency is a big story. Of course, Lorenz Larkin now. Officially a Bellator fighter. Ryan Bader signing with Bellator should be officially announced at some point this week. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Joe Duffy in free agency. Because is he the type of guy that Bellator is going to be willing to overpay for? I don't know.
I mean, look, when we have these discussions, it's so hard for us to really have it. And by the way, Joe Duffy looked great. Just he went out and outstruck Madotti and looked great doing it. Just awesome third 27 win. But when we have these discussions, Jason, it's so hard to have them without really having any type of transparency and understanding what the bankroll is for Bellator and how committed they are to maybe losing money short term to build some type of respect long term. And I like the signings of Larkin and Bader if they have the bankroll, which I assume they do, because what you're doing is simply adding talent and respect to your weight classes, and Joe Duffy would be another one of those guys. I mean, the UFC can't afford to lose guys at 155. If there's one division that they have an incredible amount of depth at, it is 155, but he's 29 years old. He's from Ireland. He's incredibly excited. He has a win over McGregor. His only loss in the UFC is to Dustin Poirier. Joe Duffy's valuable. He ain't a superstar, but if you look at what Bellator's doing, they don't necessarily care. They're just signing good fighters, and there is some tide turning with Bellator. When you sign Larkin, when you sign Ryan Bader, when you sign hypothetically Joe Duffy, you begin to build respect. Now, Bellator, again, it's all about, do they have the finances to really bite the bullet here, Jason, and potentially overpay for a fighter that will only give you a little more value than a fighter that you're going to significantly underpay for. So it's like the Moneyball formula, except for with mixed martial arts, these veterans can still add value independent of how they perform in the cage, because people are going to just watch anyway.
I'll tell you, the guy that I'll be interested to see kind of how things work out for him is actually Michael McDonald. He asked for his release from his UFC contract. That happened. And you look at 135 in Bellator, man, I would say Bellator needs Michael McDonald to add to their roster more than they needed Joe Duffy.
Oh, yeah. You're contrasting these two. Michael McDonald is the guy to go at. I mean, Michael is the one guy who he's kind of weird, right? Like, I think he has his life in perspective, which is a weird thing to have. He's the guy who's like kind of really religious, right?
Yeah, he's got a much different mindset in terms of
probably a healthier one.
probably a healthier one, but I would say right when I saw Brett Okamoto's story on that, I was like, man, that's, if you're Bellator, that's got to be the guy you go after, because 135 has no depth in Bellator. I mean, it's awful.
Well, no, the only reason why I mentioned that for anything was just simply because I didn't read that Brett Accomando article, so maybe the information's out there for why. But when you look at Michael, you always have to wonder, like, mentally, is he all 1,000,000% into the degenerate sport of mixed martial arts? Potentially, he just wants to do things more meaningful.
Yeah, no, I mean, basically what it was with him was he, you know, just had lost trust in the UFC as, from the business side. And, you know, he had mentioned about, you know, the kind of money situation and in the past with him. And but, I mean, you look at 135, I mean, let's not, you know, Leandro Higo is now fighting for the bantamweight title because Darren Caldwell has suffered an undisclosed injury. I mean, what's that say about, I mean, and no disrespect to Leandro Higo, who came into Bellator as the LFA champion. What's that say about the rest of the Bellator, you know, bantamweight roster when a guy outside of promotion, his first fight, can come in and fight for the title?
No, Bellator should jump on Michael McDonald. This is a 26-year-old that may have peaked in 2011. That is a bit of a concern if you're Bellator. He hasn't put together back-to-back wins since he beat Miguel Torres. That is concerning.
Man, that's crazy.
But his losses are to Lineker, Faber, Barao. He's had an incredible amount of space in between his Faber fight and his Kanahara fight from 2013 and 2016. His initial impression to the MMA world, When he kicked things off in WEC, made the transition to UFC at such a young age, had such a great run. That impression, I think, still lingers in the minds of me and you. So I think we still kind of expect Michael McDonald to really put it together. That's why I think, for one, you mentioned the lack of depth in the Bellator bantamweight division, and just the fact that maybe he hasn't reached his prime, but maybe his peak was like 5 years ago. Still, he's 26. That's a guy I would sign. But to be frank, I mean, maybe if I'm Bellator, you just sign both of them. Again, when you are the underdog in the MMA promotional wars, if these are wars, I would say you got to bite the bullet. You got to be like a Silicon Valley company that just spends a bunch of money every single year in the hopes that one day you'll rule the world.
You know, I think one of the things that it just as a fight fan, you really wonder what's going on with the UFC. I mean, they're just letting all these guys walk to Bellator. And Bellator is very quietly building a nice little roster, especially at 170 pounds.
And again, I want to mention this because I've mentioned this a couple of times. UFC is probably going to win out here, right? That's just generally the story of Goliaths usually win. And I've had my fair share of criticism of Bellator. You know that, Jason. You know I always like to throw cheap shots. But when you have an incredible amount of transition at the very top of Goliath, that's when David can start loading his damn slingshot. And that's what we have here with the UFC. Potentially, this transition that's taking place, these people that are now kind of in power have no general sense of what the hell they're doing. And that's when Bellator could capitalize. And look, they're signing good fighters. It's not like Lorenz Larkin and Ryan Bader. I guarantee you they're not asking for a whole hell of a lot of money in terms of like the guys that are kind of running the UFC, I assume, have like private jets. I think Ryan Bader just wants to have like a nice like retirement. So pay the dudes the money. I think this is a severe miscalculation. Because not only does your light heavyweight division absolutely suck, but you're giving one of your top fighters to your rival promotion. It's like if you're Bill Belichick and you trade one of your best players to – well, if you're Bill Belichick and you trade one of your best players, you're still in the Super Bowl. But it's like if you're an NBA team, you trade one of your best players to your rival.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see what's going on with Bellator, with the UFC and you know, letting some quality guys walk away. But final note, we got to mention the Diakis knockout. Oh man, that's gonna be on the highlight reel for years to come.
Dude, Mark Diakis, sign me up for this guy. I mean, there's a list of fighters that I love watching. Mark Diakis is one of those guys. He had so many highlights in 30 seconds, right? The spinning kicks and then the knockout, absolutely brutal. I think you pinned the nail on the head. The Joe Duffy fight, the Mark Diakis fight, that's what stuck out to the prelims. Are you looking forward to Mark Diakis at lightweight?
Oh, yeah, man. We always talk about the perfect FS1 fighter. There you go.
Yeah, and he cut a good promo afterwards. He has a whole heck of a lot of confidence. Mark Dykes, I think, is clearly one of the big winners here. I think that's kind of the two prelim fights that mattered, right, Jason? But, I mean, what, everything else was the decision on the prelims?
Yeah. I mean, it was a long prelim card. Shout out to
Lena Landsberg, by the way, right, Jason? She wins the unanimous decision, but then she gets on the mic and says that she doesn't think she should have won. That's kind of bold.
I mean, same thing Joe Lozon a couple months ago.
When he fought
Marcin Held, said, "Hey, I shouldn't have won this fight." But I watched the preliminary card actually on Saturday as I was sitting in my hotel room, just kind of waiting for to go down to the FSU game. But it was overall a decent UFC card, and we've got 3 weeks till the next UFC event.
3 weeks.
Take that one in. It's not till April 8th. Right now, we're recording this on March the 20th.
That's weird, dude. When's the last time that's happened?
It doesn't really happen much. But let me ask this just quickly on UFC 210. What? I get the feeling the UFC is trying. Is in an ideal world they want Rumble Johnson to win.
I mean, when you look at the poster, I tell you
that's an awful poster. Oh man,
Look, man. I don't think the UFC cares who wins. I mean, I think they probably do want Johnson to win. But, dude, their number one incentive is that fight actually happens. That fight needs to happen. That's their priority, Jason. We got 3 long weeks where we're checking Twitter.
Could you imagine, if something were to happen where one of those guys doesn't make it to fight night?
You're going to see Chris Weidman fight whoever drops out. I don't know what the replacement is. I guess it's Jimmy Manuel, man, right? Jimmy Manuel, you better stay lit because...
Maybe that's Jimmy Manuel's best chance to fight for a title.
Yeah, it may be. Because, dude, how many times have we seen Cormier or Johnson pull out his fights?
That's
a big concern, man.
Yeah, I did like during the prelims they had a little promo piece for Daniel Cormier. Telling Daniel Cormier's story, which right when I saw that, I said, where was this on Tyron Woodley? Of who Tyron Woodley is.
Well, the UFC is racist.
Literally, it was the first thing that came to my mind is they're telling the story of Daniel Cormier. I'm like, should they have not done this for Tyron Woodley?
The UFC is racist, bro. I mean, they got Tyron Woodley, and they're not promoting him, yet they're promoting Daniel Cormier.
I mean, if you were telling me you're going to choose one of those two guys to promote heavily, I'm promoting Tyron Woodley. He's younger.
Yeah, he's younger.
Let's be honest. How many more fights has Cormier got left in the tank?
He's probably got
three to four.
Yeah. And Tyron Woodley's your champ, your undisputed champ, and he's kind of exciting. He's got a great story. He's from Ferguson, Missouri.
And he goes out of his own way to promote himself with video blogs.
Yeah, he's got like his own little Gary Vaynerchuk video vlog. I mean, and he's a good personality, man. I really love listening to Tyron Woodley talk. I really do.
It just amazes me with Woodley of why they've not sold the story of Tyron Woodley with, what his life is. You know, a guy from Ferguson. And it just really surprises me that the UFC hasn't tried to tell that story.
Yeah, the UFC, you got a problem. If you're welterweight champion, I mean, we got two Wikipedia problems. The second Wikipedia problem I'll bring up in a little bit. But if you look up Tyron Woodley's Wikipedia article, that's a short-ass Wikipedia article for a UFC champion. And I blame the UFC, all right? You need to make sure your champs have long-ass Wikipedia articles. And I think the way you get that done is you promote the hell out of them. You promote their story. And when you have a fighter who won your welterweight championship in July 2016 – I think at this point in time, we should know a whole lot more about Tyron Woodley. This is a guy you need to put. He may not drop the belt in a while. When you look at the welterweight division, Jason, where Lawler, Maya, Condit, Masvidal, Magny, Duncan Kim, Donald Cerrone, Gunnar Nelson, Safadine, who the hell is going to beat Woodley?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes along this line of the newer new ownership of the UFC, where you just question a lot of things. You question the fact of how they really don't promote fighters, and God, how awful is those posters they've been putting out? Jesus Christ, those are awful.
Yeah, dude.
I mean the 209. I mean, who created that? A fifth grader? I mean, that was an awful poster. Then you look at 210, which was essentially the poster they did for GSP and Diaz a couple years ago, and then they just like basically cropped Weidman and Musasi right at the bottom, which made no sense to me. I'm just like, you know, it's one of those things. I look at those posters and I go, who is buying that? And I love the fact that Daniel Cormier called the UFC out on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's great. It's just, it's, oh man, it's such a bad poster. And I've had some people in the bar industry basically say that. They basically say, like, I'm supposed to hang that up in my bar and that's going to attract people to come watch the UFC?
Yeah. There's just something weird about the color red, too.
It's just weird. Like, if you're in the Cormier camp, like, you're the champion. You're the star. But then the challenger is, like, three quarters of the poster?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird promotion, I'll tell you that much. We are in weird terrains in terms of the UFC.
Let me ask you this. Are you more interested in, we're going to get in the World Series of Fighting here momentarily, are you more interested in UFC 210 or Bellator 175? Now, 175, you got King Mo and Rampage, the rematch.
Mm-hmm.
You've got some prospects on that card.
Jason, you love playing this game. I've never in my life ever told you I'm looking forward to a Bellator card or a UFC card. You know what the co-main event of Bellator 175 is? Sergey Karatanov and Chase Gormley.
Chase Gormley, will be on the M Airport podcast this week.
Amazing. He's an amazing fighter.
That's a showcase for Sergey Karatanov. The Robert Cazzolo fight, that's a good fight. That's an interesting matchup between prospects. But yeah, coming up on Wednesday's podcast, I will be joined by Chase Gormley. Also going to be joined by Douglas Lima, the Bellator welterweight champion. Ooh, interested to get his thoughts on the Daly McDonald fight, also Lawrence Larkin signing with Bellator, and when he plans to return. So we'll have Douglas on the show this week. So looking forward to talking to Douglas.
I love it. You always like to slip the Bellator thing in where it's like, Daniel, UFC or Bellator, which card's better? And I will never fall for it, Jason. I'm looking forward to Rampage King Mo. That's a good fight, but we got to understand, as kind of crap as this main card is for the UFC, UFC 210, in terms of the main card, when you think of pay-per-view, it certainly isn't up to par. You still got Weidman, Musasi, and Alves, and Cote, and Brooks, and Charles Oliveira, and I think it's just hard for Bellator to match up, but when you look at the fighters they're signing over a period of time, they may get there. But I mean, when you have Des Green on your prelims, I would assume if Des Green was fighting in Bellator, he'd be one of the main card fights.
Yeah, I will say this: I think probably one of the most interesting fights that has me most interested about UFC 210, besides the main event, would actually be Kamaru Usman taking on Sean Strickland. That's a match that has my eyes. It's not the greatest of overall lines for UFC, but obviously UFC 210, you're buying that pay per view because other main event of DC and Rumble Johnson. But on Saturday night, it was World Series of Fighting 35. And when I started to hit play on the DVR to watch World Series of Fighting 35, I started thinking this. I go, what can the World Series of Fighting do to get fans excited about their product? Their best fighters, Moraes and Gaethje, are essentially gone. Who is the face of the World Series of Fighting?
It's a beautiful face, and it's Blagoy Ivanov.
Is it really Ray Sefo?
Ray Sefo? It might be, dude, because all he if you look at the undercard, it's all his fighters. I will say, this is the second Wikipedia problem, Jason. The World Series of Fighting does not have a Wikipedia page for World Series of Fighting 35.
And you're surprised by this?
I'm not surprised, but that's a problem. You got issues as a promotion if you're on TV and you don't got a Wikipedia page. I'm just saying.
Well, just remember how long it took Justin Gaethje to get a Wikipedia page when he was a champion of the World Series of Fighting?
I know. And it's a shame because Blagoy Ivanov, he went out there, Jason. He looked good. He got the knockout over Sean Jordan. The co-main event, Andre Harrison, continues to impress, man. Don't get me wrong. When you think Andre Harrison, you don't think of Mark Diakis in terms of highlight reel type fighter. He's relatively a long-term 25-minute victory fighter. But he's damn good. He beat Lance Palmer. These are good fighters. You have a new 135 champion.
Oh, God, that was a god-awful fight, though.
Yeah,
I mean, no one. If you sit there and tell me that Mega Mudoff is defending the bantamweight title in 3 months from now in June, that's not getting me to the television set.
Yeah, and that's the issue. This card had no traction. This promotion has no traction. It is going to take a lot to revitalize this promotion.
And it seemed like it had very little media coverage.
Yeah.
And full disclosure, when we did the post-fight show last week and we talked about the fight cards coming up this week, we didn't even mention World Series of Fighting 35 because I totally forgot about it.
And that's a problem when you have your heavyweight champion on and your Andre Harrison Palmer, and you have another championship. You had three championship fights and it didn't come to mind last week. And,
I want to mention about Andre Harrison. I mean, yes, it's another decision for him. 11 of 16 wins are by decision. 8 of his last 10 fights are by decision. But I actually thought this was maybe his best performance in Titan or World Series of Fighting. Just an unbelievable performance. He dropped Lance Palmer twice. Lance Palmer, after the fact, came out, said that he broke his hand in the very first round. And I will say this, listening to the broadcast team, did no one mention to them that Andre Harrison has wrestling credentials?
Like they prepared. I don't think so.
Man, I was sitting there going, do these guys have no clue that Andre Harrison's background is in wrestling?
Yeah, him getting a couple of takedowns against Palmer isn't the most surprising thing in the world, guys.
I thought it was a great performance by Andre Harrison, but, you know, and Andre's going to have this stigma on him about being a decision fighter until he puts together a string of stoppage victories. And that's why I think that he's in a situation where even if he was a free agent, I still don't know if the UFC comes calling for him.
Dude, I feel like someone has to, man. This guy's 16-0. At some point in time, the talent is there and the amount of success you have. He deserves a shot. If it's not the UFC, Bellator, sign this guy. Somebody, sign this guy. I know he's not the most entertaining fighter in the world. He has issues with just going to distance, but he is outrageously talented. He deserves an opportunity, and I hope he gives it, Jason, eventually. He deserved it 4 fights ago, and he still hasn't got it. The only other fighter to mention on the World Series of Fighting card that comes to my mind, Jason, I didn't actually see his fight because it was a prelim fight, but Hakeem Duwadu. Duwadu,
yeah.
He got a win over Steve Styler. He's undefeated, 7-0-1, 6 KOs, 2 KOs. Didn't watch the fight, but when you look at what he did on paper, that's kind of impressive at 145.
Yeah, he is definitely a guy to pay attention there at 145 pounds. Blagoy Ivanov, another successful defense of the World Series of Fighting heavyweight title. Takes him 1 minute and 43 seconds to defeat John Jordan. And, you know, when he was released by Bellator, people were like, man, what's Bellator doing? And Bellator has to regret cutting him at this time. You know, when you look at their heavyweight roster and, you know, looking to add quality fighters, that's got to be a guy that you look at and go, why did they release him?
Yeah, when you look at the Bellator heavyweight roster, very few of them match up well with Blagoy Ivanov. Ended his Bellator career with the loss to Volkov. And since then, he's gone 4-0, Jason. 3 finishes, and we just saw one of them there. He is a guy at 30 years old that would be valuable to either the Bellator roster or the UFC roster. And the Bellator, I mean, they had him, and they let him go. And that is something that I do think they will regret. And it's kind of a shame because when you have these fighters like Ivanov and Palmer and Andre Harrison, there is something incredibly depressing watching them fight in World Series of Fighting because they are incredibly talented and no one cares.
Yeah, it's as recording this podcast, the television ratings have not come out. That'll come out on Tuesday morning, so we'll see how well they did there. But, we'll see how the World Series of Fighting does there. I did like the new production elements they had in the show with the ref cam and the corner audio. I mean, obviously nothing unique to combat sports. That it's not like they're the first people to do this, but added a nice little perspective to the broadcast. And, of course, their next event's going to be in June, World Series of Fighting 36, and so we'll see what happens there with the World Series of Fighting. Of course, as we mentioned, No UFC, no Bellator this week. Of course, the UFC card not for a couple more weeks. Bellator does return next week for Bellator 175. So, of course, I'll have some pre-fight interviews coming up on the MMA Report podcast. Look out for that as I'm interviewing some guys this week. And as I mentioned on Wednesday's MMA Report podcast, I am going to be joined by the Bellator welterweight champion, Douglas Lima. Of course, you can always follow myself on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Follow Daniel on Twitter at Daniel Gavon. DGG, of course, you can always listen to this podcast on RadioInfluence.com, also available on iTunes and Stitcher.
This is Vincent Hill. You've seen me on CNN, HLN with Nancy Grace, Al Jazeera, and True Crime with Aphrodite Jones, just to name a few. Now I've got my own show on Radio Influence, and I'll be taking you beyond the badge. I'll take you behind the scenes and into the minds of those following and investigating America's top news stories. Beyond the Badge with me, Vincent Hill, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and the Radio Influence family. Let's enjoy this ride as I take you beyond the badge.